This is John Walton, and you're listening to the Power Play Point Podcast with the Blue Liner on Point and Anna Knox.
Hello, Power Play Point Podcast fans. Blue Liner on Point here. And yeah, it's no sense sugarcoating it. This is going to be something of a sobering episode, not just to honor our good friend Frank Kirchner, but also due to recent events, obviously. But I just wanted to take a few seconds here and explain my line of thinking, my rationale for what we'll be doing. And basically, yes, the message is Black Lives Matter. And it is because the African American community is a big part of the DMV. But if even one part of our community is not being served, is being left behind, is experiencing injustice to an extreme degree, then that's not good for any of us, not good for all of us. And so, unfortunately, it's not really about hockey anymore. It's about life. It's about how to improve things. It's about how to be better as human beings. So I thought, what better way to at least start the discussion by having Stuart Small on, good friend and colleague, on with Anna and myself, and get the ball rolling as far as that goes. So again, the message is that Black Lives Matter, and through that, hopefully, everything, not just in the DMV, but in America and all around the world, eventually improves. Thanks for indulging us, and hope you enjoy the show.
Here's Wilson, and on the right, certainly score!
Rebound loose, wild scramble in front, score! Ovechkin with a buzzer beater! It'll count!
And a hat trick tonight, number 21, 7 minutes for Luke.
Hello and welcome once again to the Power Play Point Podcast. This is your host, the Blue Liner on Point, speaking to you live from downtown Glen Burnie, Maryland. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is a special edition, and I think everybody listening knows why. So that in mind, for this week, I have not one, but two co-hosts with me. First, of course, the one and only mermaid live herself from Centerville, Virginia, is the mermaid, yes. Anna Knox.
Good evening, Gil. I feel like it's been a while since we've chatted, but I think all my days and whatever are just sort of blending together. But yeah, I'm excited to be on the show tonight.
A common theme during this quarantine, but yes. And yes. Also with us is a special guest co-host for this episode. Some of you more faithful recent listeners might know him already. If you do not, he is Mr. Stuart Small. He's been on us many, many episodes in the past. Stuart, how are you doing this evening?
Doing just fine. Happy to be able to breathe. How are you two doing?
You know what? I will say, you said happy to breathe, and I am, I have to say, come Thursday at 3 o'clock, when I'm officially done with the school year, right now I'm good. Then, 48 hours or so, I'll be fantastic.
All right.
That busy, huh?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just end of the year things that this with the COVID, it's interesting with teaching because you think like, oh, well, you know, you're doing this all virtually. Then you figure out like these little things that you have to do at the end of the year. You know, of course, there's report cards, which we always do. But it's like you have a virtual checkout and you have to be sure that if this kid is doing extended school year, like kind of like a summer school, the paperwork is you know, documented, it's signed, it's this, it's that, and then parents are kind of freaking out, and they want to have answers about what's going to happen in the summer, what's going to happen in the fall. And it's just like talking a lot of people off the ledge to be like, hey, listen, we, you know, we may not know where we're going, but we are always going to be here to support your child. But yeah, today was 5 hours of meetings, and that's a lot. And I don't usually participate, so it's not like it's a lot of like Anna talking. It's just my attention deficit is just like, what's going on outside? I think I need to go do laundry. I think I need, you know, it's like I'm thinking of all these other things that are in the meetings. But 5 hours of meetings is definitely, I was done. But 2 more days.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's still, I don't know. I guess I don't know if I should put it this way, but we all should be used to kind of what COVID has done. But at least by now, since we've been living in it for about 3 months. But I mean, I still miss hockey. I still am bummed. I'm really, really wishing there was a Stanley Cup final for me to watch.
Right.
I really, really wish hockey in some form or fashion would come back. More on that later. I don't know. Stuart, how are you handling all this?
Well, my thing is, while I do miss the sports, because I'm a huge sports fan, as you all know, I've really been able to just take this time to just rest and reflect. And I don't know what your respective religious beliefs are, but just to pray over what I do have to just handle this situation as it becomes. And I must admit, it's also given me time to save money, as since there are no games, I haven't been charged for my Mystics tickets. I haven't been charged for my DC United tickets. And given that I just bought a new car a couple of months ago, I think I mentioned that, this has been a good reflective time to just save money, to just do me, and to just kind of get myself together and just to focus on me, not have to run around and do a whole bunch of different activities. While the activities are fun, I have to admit it has been nice just to be able to just sit, relax a little bit. Telework, that's a big thing. I can definitely telework. And it's, even though I telework twice a week on a normal basis, it's kind of cool to be able to stay up later, to get up later, and just have a t-shirt and pajama bottoms as I'm working. I'm just basically making the most out of the situation, making the best out of what is kind of a low situation. But, you know, I'm dealing. I'm trying to keep my mom from going out. That's been a difficult thing. My dad used to always say that I was hard at it. I think I know from whom I get it now. So.
That's being in the situation has allowed us to, well, we wish, try to get more in tune with what's going on in the world, or at least slightly beyond our backyard. And that's the reason for this special edition. So unless, of course, you've been living in a cave somewhere and not aware what's going on, of course, there have been some very, very horrible things, some very good things, few and far between sprinkled in, but mostly horrible things going on in our in American cities and everywhere across this country we live in. And it all, of course, started with the murder of George Floyd. So if it has not been explained in his past appearances, Mr. Stuart Small is of course a DC resident and a member of the African American community. So I have asked him to come on this episode to share his perspective and his thoughts on that situation. But perspective being as important as it is, I want to get what I'm seeing
out of the way, out there and out of the way. For those of you listening for the first time, and if you've never heard me say it, I'm not completely Caucasian either. I am half Asian. My mother immigrated from South Korea, so that makes me half Korean. So being a Korean American, I have experienced some forms of racism myself. But that's just me. And honestly, me is the last thing the situation should be about. But again, it helps knowing what perspective is. One perspective is. Like to think all three of us were kind of we grew up in a generation where a time where things seemed a lot simpler. You learn things from your values, from your parents, and maybe other adult role models, and sometimes even in my case from cartoons. You know, I try not to make this into too much of a joke, but I'd like to say I learned some very, very valuable lessons from Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids. You know, about how to treat your neighbors, you know, but unfortunately, as it turns out, it never really was that simple to begin with. And because the problem is that it's within the system. And that means it's not just us, one man or woman or group of men or women that are charged with fixing it. It's all of us. So, and for that reason, mainly, I felt like, even though we're a Small Potatoes Washington Capitals podcast, I felt like it was our responsibility to talk about it, to start the dialogue in our own little way, to get it out there. And if it pisses some of you off listening, I'm sorry, but I have to do this. You want us to stick to hockey? We will talk about hockey. There is hockey news to talk about, but this honestly is more important. We have to get it out there. We have to have this dialogue. Discussion comes from dialogue and provokes thought. Thought leads to ideas. Ideas that turn into action, and action is what brings about real change. And honestly, if you out there listening, you on the earbuds, on the other side of the earbuds, the speakers, what have you, thinks that what we have right now is working, then I'm sorry, but you're dead wrong, because it's not. That's why we're having this discussion. So, again, I've asked Stuart to come on because over the few years that I've come to know him, I have found him to be of very, very strong moral character. And that's not just because of his Christian faith. That is because I've seen how he interacts with people. I've seen how he treats people. I've seen his respect for history, his respect for tradition, his respect for all people, no matter where they come from. And I thought, based on that, he was the perfect person to have on to have this discussion with us and kind of hopefully lead the way here, because it's all about education and bettering ourselves. Because when it comes down to it, we all need to learn how to be better at this, better how to treat our Black brothers and sisters and neighbors. And it takes someone from that community to show us the way. And that's why I have you on, Stuart. So we had a long text conversation about this. So I'll give you the floor now and shut my mouth and give us some thoughts about this, if you could, please.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, thank you very much for those kind words. I wanted to take a step back, and you mentioned my Christian faith. I appreciate that. I want to just make this clear. I'm not trying to throw my religion in your face. I'm not trying to act like I'm angelic, holier than thou, this, that, and the other. Believe me, I have my moments. So I want to make that crystal clear that this isn't a platform I'm using just to show I'm a Christian, I'm great, I'm better than you. No, no, no. Please do not misunderstand me on that. I want to make that clear.
Certainly.
Secondly, I would just say that these last few weeks have brought back memories of my first encounters with racism. And the thing that the one that stands out in my mind is when I was 14 years old, I was walking through a department store and I was leaving and I was walking out with a couple of other white customers. We didn't know each other. We were just all leaving together. And at the time, they were testing the fire alarms. I remember when I first walked into the store, I said fire alarms, burglar alarms, excuse me. And I first walked in the store and I heard it. And someone says, oh, we're just testing the alarm. So I'm thinking, okay, well, no problem. So I'm walking through, getting ready to go to the, going to the parking lot. And the alarms go off again. Now, as I said, the two white people were leaving with me. Well, the store manager sees me. And I should mention that I had a bag that from another that I had with me from an item that I bought at another store. And he stopped me. He let the other people go, saying they were fine to go, but I had to stay. And I was detained for an hour. And eventually the police were brought in. Now, I knew in my heart that I didn't do anything, but it was a very scary situation. And I've heard there are stories about PG County police officers. And again, let me take a step back and say, I know it's not all PG County police officers, Prince George's County, for those of you who may not know what PG County is, that they have a bit of a not so good reputation. And I was frightened. That was the first time I'd ever experienced anything like that. And seeing all this come about, and everything that's taken place with the jogger in Georgia, with Breonna Young, and now with George Floyd, all I could think is that could have been me underneath that police officer's knee. That could have very easily been me. That's not hyperbole. That's just an issue, because I can think back to times in which I was followed around in stores. I can think to a time in which I was pulled over and a police officer was asking me all these questions that I didn't think had anything to do with what he said that I was speeding. And it just brings back a lot of memories. Now, having said all that, I've been very, very, very soothed by seeing how everyone has been pulled together by this, how I've had a number of people tell me, we stand with you, we see you, we understand. And I think that a lot of the conversations that take place about race, there's a misunderstanding there, because what I might see as discriminatory, and Anna, I'm just using as an example, Anna, you may not see that. Our experiences are different. It goes back to, and I'm opening up another can of worms here, it goes back to the name of Washington's pro football team. Some say, right. Oh, well, it's a matter of honor. It's a badge of honor, where Native Americans will say, well, no, that has to do with scalping Native Americans for bounties, and that's the color the skin became when they were scalped. So it's all a matter of, we need to all sit down and listen to each other. We need to have an open mind. The talks are going to be painful. There are probably going to be things that people don't want to hear and they may not necessarily agree with, but I think what I'm seeing little by little is that now people are listening. There are a lot of people who are coming out and saying, I now understand my white privilege. Braden Holtby said it. Tom Wilson said it. Blake Wheeler from the Jets are saying it. The Winnipeg Jets is saying it. And I think that has been something that's positive, but there's still much work to be done. I believe in police reform. I don't believe in defunding the police. We still need the police to protect and to serve us, and there are a lot of good police officers out there who want to do that and are committed to that acrimonious relationship between the African-American community and the police notwithstanding. So I think, long story short, it's just a matter of these issues are finally coming out to the forefront. And it's been a soothing balm for me, but it's also been quite a time of reflection for a lot of other people in other communities. And I think that needs to continue. And I hope that this continues long after the protests have ended.
And I would certainly agree with that. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing this. This is not just a one-off. This is hopefully the start of a renewed dialogue. And unfortunately, as you mentioned, we've already mentioned a couple names, but unfortunately, George Floyd and Breonna Taylor are only two of the latest names. If you want, I can go ahead and rattle off probably seven or eight more at least. And that's only going back the last 20 years. But right. Unfortunately, this is not a new problem. There has to be a brand new open dialogue, as you said, and it can only be out of that change actually happens. Now, Anna, we're trying not to shut you out because you also have a unique perspective in that you serve in a public school,
right.
and you encounter what can be potential problematic situations that have everything and anything to do with race.
Right.
So not unlike police officers, you serve in that public capacity. So you also have a unique perspective that I think we should all hear.
Sure. Well, I will start with Stuart, your honesty and just compassion. If I were friends, you're so great. I really do appreciate it. And so, you know, because it's a topic that people feel very uncomfortable at times, very vulnerable about talking about anything that has to do with race, because someone doesn't want to step boundaries and say the wrong thing. And so today we had a staff meeting, which is not the norm. And it was at 3:30, and all, 108 staff members, whatever, logged in to this meeting. And our principal is African-American female, and our assistant principal is Hispanic female. And they just wanted to open the chat and the opportunity for us to talk about what we've been feeling, not just with George Floyd, but what has come from that. Did people want to talk about the protesting? Did they want to talk about his funeral? Did people, and all that kind of stuff. And it was very eye-opening to listen to some of my coworkers today, many who cried and who kind of unloaded on what they're going through, what they're feeling. And we're talking, all races, genders, you name it. And I really thought it was so, I don't know, to me it was, at first when I heard about this, I thought, God, this could really be a can of worms because it is something that people are like, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but I don't want to sound like a racist, but... And I think that our principal really just stood back and said, like, listen, we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about it. And it's not just going to be today. We're going to talk about it in a couple of days. We're going to talk about it next week. I want everyone to feel comfortable with asking questions, giving perspectives, giving opinions, all that kind of stuff. And I feel like this little forum that we had today was really quite powerful, and everyone was vulnerable. And that's always one of those things, you could feel quite uncomfortable. But I will say, so the one thing that I shared with my coworkers and listening to what they were going through was a quote that I had actually, I think I probably put on all social media platforms that I'm on. And it said that I understand that I will never understand however I stand. And for me, I had to look at that quote and say, I'm at a point right now where I just need to listen you know, I don't need to make my opinion known. I need to reflect on, you know, how, like, you know, my husband and I are, you know, like, hey, everybody's equal. And I'm so proud of my kids for being like, why would a police officer do that to somebody? And their reaction. And to me, that makes my heart explode, because I'm like, right, that's exactly what I wanted, you know, them to recognize, that kind of stuff. But I also wanted to, I don't know, it just, it was very emotional. And it was very, you know, like when you guys talk about the importance of communication. And I think sometimes you just have to get out of your comfort zone. And you have to say, you know, if you have a, like, my best friend is Black, and if I'm like, hey, Chris, my God, what can I do to change things, you know, to make things better? And if he tells me, you know what, maybe read this book, or come to this rally, or sign this petition, whatever it is, it's all things that's new to me, and I just need to be open to it, and I need to just stop and listen, because none of us are too old to ever learn from anybody else. And I think that that is a huge thing. Like, I could be a teacher, and yes, I can be 45 years old teaching a bunch of 9-year-olds, but I'm still 45 years old, and I'm still learning on how I can help, how I can understand, and how I can make things better for the future, if that makes sense.
It does. And you really touched on it, Anna. Listening, that's the big thing. We all, and I, when I say all of us, I mean all of us, both sides, all, I don't want to say sides, but we need to listen to each other. We need to understand each other. I mean, you don't learn if you're like, no, 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 no. You have to consider the other people, the other person's perspective, and that their perspective may not necessarily be the same as yours. In fact, just about a week before Mr. Floyd's death, I actually had a debate with someone, a white friend of mine, who was saying that he thought that sometimes Blacks carried a torch about something that happened in the past, and that it's not that big of a deal, and that he teaches his kids to be colorblind. Now, he's a very open-minded person, and he tries to, I commend him for judging only the person's heart. But unfortunately, when you say, oh, well, we're colorblind, it kind of lessens the feelings of the person of color and their perspective. As I mentioned, I told you about the traffic stop. I told you about getting caught at that department store. That is something that, as a Black man, I always have to be aware could happen. A white woman, a white man would never have to worry about that, but I, as a Black man, would. And no matter, you, Anna, you gave me a lot of great compliments. Well, there are people out there who are just going to look at me, and they're just going to see me as, well, you know, fill in the blank. So that's a big difference between, say, an African-American and a white person. And that's something that needs to be
understood. But I will share, since we're having an open line of conversation and communication, I will say that, and I agree. Like, we should all get out of our comfort zones, but it's not even our comfort zones. Like, this is who we are, and I'm not going to apologize for, you know, being Caucasian, because there are a ton of white people out there that are fucking assholes and people that I absolutely hate. But I'm like, for myself, I can be like, okay, well, this is who I am. I'm not all of those other people. But I will say, in December of 1996, when you're talking about things that you know, really stick out in your mind, I had lost my father in May. I was coming out here for Christmas to see my brother with my mom in D.C. So I was in California, and we were coming out for Christmas, and my brother said to me, the Holocaust Museum had just opened up, and it's really quite emotional, and it's really quite powerful if you and mom want to go. I was like, yeah, you know, absolutely. why not? And so my mother and I went, and I was standing in line and she was in the line next to me. And I recall I was in college and we had all kind of gone through goth stage, so whatever, but that's not, who cares? So I had like Doc Martens on and I had a coat on because it was December. And I got pulled out of the line. And as my mother went through, and then she kind of looked back and this woman was like, I need you to step over here. Okay. And I was frisked and, you know, like, hey, do you have anything? Do you have any? I was like, no, I'm here to kind of honor, you know, everybody in this museum. And the gentleman who came over, who was like head of security, said, is there a problem? And she said, yes, she looks like she would carry a weapon.
What?
And I just remember looking at her, and under her breath, she said, white supremacist. And
outrageous.
I, like, my mother, I felt like, was like, oh my God, we're going to be on the news. Like, she's going to lose her shit. She was like, did you just call my daughter? And, like, and the woman, not knowing that that was my mother, who, when she stormed over, said, did you just call my daughter a white supremacist? And she said, well, you know, she looks like one.
What? Wait a minute.
And
what?
I will tell you, Stuart and Gail, like, this is in, I will say, December 23rd, 1996, Holocaust Museum. I will never, ever forget the encounter that someone thought that I looked like a white supremacist. And
oh my gosh.
What it did to me, like, and I just remember my mother, like, I mean, obviously, like, she did her thing, and I just looked at the woman, like, absolutely disgusted. And eventually, I was able to go and experience this, you know, I don't want to say horrific museum, but I don't know another way to describe this heart-wrenching museum.
Yeah, no,
but in the back of my mind, I thought, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you thought, like of all people to be at a Holocaust museum, you think I'm a white supremacist? Like I'm a, like, some Hitler supporter? And it was all, she just said, it's just, I just looked at, I just had the vibe. And to this day, I mean, I will tell you, like, to this day, it's still, I have not been back to the museum since, because it was enough to be like, you know, I will go, I will take my kids to it. But that was my own moment of, like, what a god awful thing to be called. You know, like, if you want to, you know, call, you know, I don't even know what could be worse. And so it was so upsetting. Like, and I didn't know when we started recording this if it was even going to be relevant to bring it up, but I thought, you know what, it is, because
of course it is.
Because it still bothers me. And like, I look at that thinking, are you, oh my God, like, this woman was so, it was like, she was just pretty, like, she just said it so flip, like, oh yeah, hey, my name is Jan, and by the way, you look like a white supremacist. I was like, oh my God.
Go ahead, Stuart.
I was going to say, what you just described is how many of these racial incidents start. People say, well, you look like one of those robbers,
yeah,
or you look suspicious. That's exactly what it's like. That's the life of a black man or black African-American.
And why I was hesitant on saying something was because it was one incident in 1996, you know, so it was over 20 years ago, and I've had people be like, oh, you look intimidating, or oh, you look like a bitch, or whatever, but nothing racial. So that's why I hesitated on sharing it, because I was like, this was so long ago, but it,
well,
you know,
still,
it did
still
bother me.
And that,
it's still relevant,
I mean,
but
I'm not
going
to make any excuses for it. The only thing I can figure is that maybe they thought your coat looked like it could have a weapon. Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what your coat was or anything like that, but that doesn't even make sense.
No. I mean, and honestly, I was coming from Los Angeles, So like I didn't have a heavy coat. I had like it was like an LL Bean jacket my mom had sent me, and I was like, all right, whatever. And I had jeans. I had Doc Martens. There was not anything else. There were no cell phones. I didn't have a purse. I didn't have anything. It was just we were going to go and you know take in this museum and everything else. But yeah, but to be specifically pulled out of line and asked, you know, did I, you know, frisked and everything else, and then to say that I was like a white supremacist really rocked me. And I will say that it was kind of eye-opening for me to say at that moment that I had graduated college like 6 months later, and I went into the field of teaching, and it happened to be in a very let's just say it was very like in certain sections of LA, like one street's great and the other next one isn't. That experience is very eye-opening for me to see how these, you know, stereotypes or these judgments happen so quickly from people. But when you have a moment to sit down with the single mom or the single dad of the student and understand where they're coming from, regardless of race, you understand the need for communication and compassion.
So whoever this person was, I mean, to blurt that out in the middle of a Holocaust museum, they obviously
white supremacist.
Have no clue what the word irony means or
here I am trying to, Gil, I don't know if you've ever been to the museum. I literally am kind of in a situation where I encourage people to go, but I encourage you to go on your own because you're certainly not going to talk. Like in the African American Museum, oh my God, like I could talk to the people who, you know, just everything that goes on there, and you can discuss things with people. This museum is quiet because you are taking in the severity of everything. It's a little bit more.
No, I get what you're saying, before anybody even thinks it, I'm going to say it. This is not a contest. No ethnic group's suffering is worse than the other. I'm speaking mainly to the listeners. Before anybody even has that thought, I'm nipping it in the bud. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Because what I meant was in the Holocaust Museum is very, you know, solemn, and you're usually not engaged in a conversation about things or people because you are just you're there, and I was quite numb. But I felt people looking at me like,
and that's
like that, enjoying this or something. Well, and I thought, good God.
Right. That's another point I wanted to make in that, yes, we have to have this dialogue, but no, it's not going to be easy to have it. And I think that's one of the problems going in. I think there is going to be, I don't know how else to put this, and forgive me if I'm putting it the wrong way, but I think there's going to be this reverse prejudice, if it even exists, of how can you possibly understand what the problem is when you're on the other side of the problem, when you are on the cause side of the problem. You have the privilege. And make no mistake, folks, when people say white privilege, it exists. Okay? That's not, if you feel shame, you ought to. I'm sorry, but, you know.
100%, and that's why I think
white people don't have to walk down the street and worry about, after 9 p.m., and worry about somebody tailing them and saying, hey, what are you doing out here?
Yeah, when you're you look suspicious.
Like Stuart, absolutely. You're just going to get groceries or something, and you're, you know. But that's the problem I think we need to get past, is that feeling of, okay, you can't participate in this discussion because you are the original cause of the problem. We all have to be the solution, every one of us. There has to be an equality. And before anybody else thinks it, no, it's not just ethnicities. It's of course, gender as well.
Right.
And I'm going to speak to that when we get to the end of this dialogue, but we've got to have an equality in dialogue too. It has to go all ways, I think. And that I think is going to be the hardest part in getting past, is that feeling that, all right, well, you know, you've had it one way for hundreds and hundreds of years now in this country, you can't speak. You no longer have a voice. And that can't be either. So that's my one fear, is that it goes way too far in that direction, because we've already seen what happens when you shut out one whole group from even having a voice. That's how all this started. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, two wrongs don't make a right.
Exactly.
When you sent a text message last week or 10 days ago saying, hey, I can do this, I can do the show this morning or whatever. And I had been up and I had been watching the news and all of this George Floyd stuff is coming to surface, and the videos and things were kind of starting to, I don't want to say unravel, but they were starting to, you know, things were starting to be like, hey, wait, this is not okay. And people were standing their ground. I wasn't ready to come on the show because it was incredibly, in this day and age of cell phones and social media, watching somebody die is horrific. But watching the circumstances is, it's quite, I got to the point where I was like, okay, when I'm watching hockey games and I'm like, I want to trip on somebody, and this cop, I was like, I'm going to, what the fuck is wrong with you? And all these other things. But what I will say coming out of it is that people have shown me in the last 10 days and myself included, that this is the time. Like, we are not going to not talk about this, and we are going to move forward, and we're going to fix this, because now is the time. And everyone uniting together in peaceful protests and everything, to me was, I don't know, I was kind of at a loss of words of watching a lot of them, because it wasn't just DC. My cousin in New Zealand, was marching, and you have Europe and you have people in LA and other, and that's, to me, that's George Floyd. And that's the message that needed to come out. And that's when people need to say, okay, you know what? I am vulnerable to this topic, but it is time to address it. And it is time to move forward.
And it's time to make it count.
Absolutely.
And because like I mentioned before, this is not the first time. I feel like in case I haven't, or we rather haven't hammered the point home, or that point home, I'm going to go ahead and read off some names I've prepared. And to the three of us, they're going to sound familiar. I don't know if they're going to sound familiar to some of our listeners, but they ought to.
Sure.
Rodney King, Amadou Diallo, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Freddie Gray, Walter Scott, Samuel DuBose, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor. Already mentioned her. That's just a handful. That is maybe the pointiest tip of the iceberg. That doesn't even refer to all of the lynchings going back to Reconstruction. That doesn't refer to the injustices of the slavery before that. That's just the very tippy top of the point. That is the uphill stream that we're fighting against. But as I like to say, history's also on our side. But because we have seen where one person with a righteous cause and thought in his heart and mind can lead an entire people into peace. And I'm referring to, of course, to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But as right. you know, Stuart, as you and I discussed in our chat, I think we've more than lost our way. We have to find somehow we have to find our way back to that. And I right now, and this is why we all need to be educated. I don't know what it's going to take.
I think, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I think a lot of people think that racism isn't a big deal because you no longer have signs that say colored entrance or no blacks allowed or colored water fountain. Right. They think, oh, well, it's a thing of the past. There's Ooh. Nothing to really Better get not. That upset about. It's not that big of a deal. But again, it goes back to perspective. It goes back to experiences. And you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head.
Well, and education. Our conversation today in my school, we have this woman that her name is Barb, and is just the most fantastic. Like, you never like engage with somebody in a conversation and they could be talking about how she parked her car, but you just are like, that's amazing. Like how she phrases everything. Well, she is I'm drawing a blank on somebody who would give a tour at a museum. What is the word I'm looking for? Like you would have a small.
A guy? Is that what you're
saying? Like, no, I feel like it has a different, it's more important than a guy. But either way, so she is at the African American Museum, and this is what she does aside from teaching in sixth grade. And she gives such a amazing perspective on how our, we'll say in Fairfax County, the curriculum has started to shift from really being honest about our history in the U.S. and how things get, you know, this happened and then this happened. You know, it's like, okay, but there's so much more that goes into it, and how oftentimes our curriculum in fourth grade, if we talk about in fourth grade Virginia history, is all about Jamestown, and slavery is discussed. However, no other race is talked about or considered when students say to us, hey, well, what about, you know, Chinese, or what about this, or what about that? And it's like, we don't know what to say because the history just focuses on this one aspect, and it's not allowing the students to learn, you know, about all cultures. It's just become very frustrating for all of us when we're like, I mean, for me, back in the day, it's like I learned about the Holocaust, I learned about, you know, and it was slavery, and I learned about all the wars, I learned about, you know, all the hatred and everything. As part of it, it was like, hey, this is what happened in the U.S. in the world, and we're not going to turn a blind eye to it. But now we're starting to not only are we not talking about, we're just eliminating it like it didn't exist. And so Barb had like this, you know, fantastic thing to say about, we have to go back to not just having open lines of communication about our, you know, our race and who we are, but we also need to get back to, let's talk about our history. We can't deny it. So just not putting it in the history book doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Exactly. And actually, you just touched on something about the history. Of course, you're both well familiar with the factoids that I post every day, almost every day. There was a school district in North Carolina that actually voted not to add African American history to its curriculum. And that, too, is an – I don't remember what district it was, but city council –
I find that hard to believe, extremely hard to believe.
That's just disgusting. Like, yeah. I just...
Beyond disgusting. Please continue.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I've always liked to consider my factoids, not just Black history, but it's U.S. history. It's a history that's been ignored. And obviously, as you can see, it continues to be ignored. And that is another part of why there are a lot of the problems. People don't want to hear the history. They know about Martin Luther King. They know about Rosa Parks. They might know about Frederick Douglass. But whereas everyone knows about Thomas Edison and Alexander Graham Bell, they don't know about Garrett Morgan, who invented the gaslight and the traffic signal. They don't know about Elijah McCoy, who was a Black Canadian from whom we get the phrase "the real McCoy" because he had over 70 patents during his lifetime. We don't know about the Lewis Latimers of the world. I have a friend named Lee Latimer. I always get them confused. We don't know about the Lewis Latimers of the world. Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, but Lewis Latimer invented the carbon filament that makes the light bulb last longer. Edison's model only lasted a couple of hours, whereas Latimer's additions made it so that they'll last much longer than that.
Right. And that's absolutely, one of those things that I sit back as a teacher and think, why is our curriculum, just sugarcoating or there was a World War II and then this happened. It's like, we have to talk about the things that are going to be uncomfortable because that is what happened. And in order for it to not happen again, you have to have that open line of communication. You have to educate people and you have to be willing to just shut up and listen. Listen to what people are saying. And I do feel like as much as I have probably passed judgment, I will say, I'll be guilty on the millennials, on their kind of feeling of entitlement and things that they deserve. If they are the ones that are going to be the driving force for some of these protests and to keep it going, then I admire them. If it is the older generation and who is going to, keep pushing until they see what they want, then I admire it. But you know what? Come together. We don't need to even make, categories or stereotypes. Just do what's right, people. It's like we're at a state right now where it's like, I'm just so in awe of people who are still feeling this hatred towards another race or gender or whatever it is. It's like, God, at 2020, we should all be just accepting. And unfortunately, that's what I want. Is it going to happen? I can only hope it will, and raise my children to be, hey, everybody's all good.
Well, that's all we can strive for. But putting a nice neat a little bow on this as we can. as I mentioned before, this little hockey podcast of ours. We're going to try and continue the dialogue as best we can. And the best way we can do that is to continue, well, not continue because we never really started, but at least ensuring that the hockey culture we grew up to know moves in the direction that is more inclusive. And of course, it's come to light, of course, about, and Stuart, you and I discussed these incidents, but of course, what Akeem Alou experienced at the hands of Bill Peters and Keandre Miller, who is the New York Rangers top draft choice last year, and that the incident where the live chat feed was hijacked with racist messages, just in case you out there listening don't know what we're talking about. Unfortunately, hockey's culture has some cleaning up to do as well. We can't claim anymore that wow, these are a bunch of great guys playing, and nothing bad ever happens because these guys are so genuine and good. Well, as we all learned, even in our own backyard, there's some bad eggs. There's a bad element that has to be dealt with. So again, bringing it back to this podcast, I would like to do what we can to set an example, and because I'm also there's a bit of German in my ancestry, I'd like to be as efficient as I can and include all groups. I have made a decision to donate $100 to the Black Girl Hockey Club because I think
fantastic.
That is a voice that has not been heard, deserves to be heard, and it's kind of killing me because two of the founders are Pittsburgh Penguins fans.
Ouch. Knock it down to 50.
But no. I gave 100 on behalf of the Truckers Fund, thanks to the sale of the masks. But I think it only fair, given what has gone on and the fact that the voices of African-American women have not been heard at all, or at least not sufficiently in my ears to this point. I think they more than deserve a place at the table. So I've made that decision to donate to them. I'm going to continue to advertise to them. I'm going to start a dialogue if I can with their founder, Renee Hess.
Have her on the show.
She doesn't know this yet. She doesn't know this yet, but I made that decision after seeing what all has gone on and understanding or trying to understand what's gone on with hockey culture and admiring the women's game for so long.
It all started, needs to be on.
Yeah, I trust me, I'm going to try. And it all started. I did this many years ago on an episode, focusing on Black History Month. Angela James, African Canadian. I'm pretty sure she's in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, she is.
There's a good reason why, because she was one of the best. And it started with her. It continues to this day with Blake Bolden, who plays in the NWHL.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many others, and I'm kicking myself for this, but there's a recent draft choice that the Buffalo Buttes made that's supposed to be the next best thing, the next real thing. I'm blanking on her name. I'm going to kick myself for not knowing it, but she's gone on Twitter and made statements, and everything I'm seeing about her personality tells me that she is going to be something to behold these coming years. So again, I wanted to put that out there, not certainly not for mine or this show's glorification, but because that's a voice in our own small way that I want to amplify. So I think that's a good place to start.
It's a fantastic place to start. Yeah.
So
you and I, we'll reach out and get them on the show.
I would more than love to, because they also have a couple of Caps fans as part of their founders group. So hopefully they'll be amenable. But I think that would be a great way to help keep the dialogue going, because the moment it fades away, moment it loses steam, I think we'll just end up sliding back to that place where we all forget again. And something like this, like a person being murdered in 8 minutes before our eyes by, authority we're supposed to, look up to as serving and protecting the community, happens again. And we can't afford to let that happen. Not a one of us, not a single member of the human race can afford that. I get that might sound hyperbolic, but if now's not the time for that, when? So
I think you're referring to Whitney Dove, by the way.
Yes, that's her name. Whitney Dove. Yes. Thank you, Stuart. Mm-hmm. I knew you would come up with it.
You got me curious. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, she was awesome. Was like a second round draft choice in the recent NWHL draft, and she's been on Twitter quite a few times and made some very eloquent statements. I was very impressed with her, with how she's carried herself, and yeah, I think she's gonna stand up to the scrutiny and be one to watch for sure.
Awesome. I love it.
So, we're long on time, and not that we couldn't spend an entire evening and more discussing about it, but I think that's where we all are as far as that goes.
Yeah, I think this was well done, Gil. Thank you for your attention on this and your interest in this. So this was very well done. So you should be proud of yourself.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I don't want it to be about me or even this podcast, but I appreciate that, Stuart, very, very, very mm-hmm. much.
You got it.
All right. So we got a few other things to cover. Stuart, I never got an answer from you. You're welcome to stay on if you'd like, but of course I understand if you've got a lot of other things to take care of. You don't really have to stay on. Like I said, a few more things we need to get through.
Yeah, I actually have to dash off tonight, but I appreciate your having me on as always.
Oh, it was, I'm sure Anna will agree. It was our pleasure and privilege actually to have you on, Stuart. I can't say it enough. You've obviously got media experience. You're very well spoken. You're very eloquent. Again, I thought you were the perfect person to have on to lead us in this discussion. I could not have asked for more with what you delivered tonight.
Okay, glad I can help out. Thank you for that.
You're so very welcome.
All right.
Bye, Stuart. We'll talk soon.
Guys, take care tonight.
You too. Have a
take
nice
care.
Evening.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Before we get to that, of course, this week's episode dedicated to late fellow fan Frank Kirchner. Before we get to that, though, we'll need to catch up. I don't know if it's really catching up because ain't nothing really happened. But of course, the announcement has been made that phase two is now in effect right. as of yesterday. And that, of course, has given the green light to all the remaining teams that have qualified for the beyond the season play. I don't even know. I still don't know what to call it.
Right. I know.
to have informal practices within the team facilities of no more than 6 players at a time. It is the rule, and have set down strict guidelines and staffing for both testing, medical staffing, and cleaning, of course, of said facilities. I've seen Twitter pictures of Alex Ovechkin getting with some of the guys of the Florida Panthers, because he's down in Miami, of course. Congratulations, by the way, Alex and Nastya on the birth of your second son, Ilya.
Adorable.
But, So right now, here's the latest we have. The season, for all intents and purposes, has been declared over. The 24 teams have qualified for this second series of whatever it is. We don't know what to call it yet. Top 4 teams in each conference, first and second place in each division, have qualified for a first round bye. The remaining 8 teams are going to play a best of 5 series to qualify to get into the actual playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And the top 4 teams are going to play a round robin series. They're going to play each other once, and if it all ties out, they're going to be seeded based on regular season point percentage.
Okay.
Otherwise, that record in that tournament, that mini tournament, is going to determine who's 1 through 4, and then I'm not quite sure how it works after that. There's going to be no brackets, as I understand it, and I think teams are going to be seeded. one through eight and then reseed after every round is my understanding of it. So the beauty of all this is, I guess, if there is one, is that you don't know who the hell you're going to be playing.
Right.
So it's going to make the playoffs interesting if they ever get there, but I don't know. It still seems like they're half-assing it to me, and they're talking like mid-July or August before everything even starts, and I'm thinking, well, geez, I mean, why even bother?
Right. Well, I heard from Robbie Gross today, who sent me a message when he was asking when I was done with school, and they have a new format going on in Sports on the Hill, but he wasn't going to talk about I wasn't going to go on, and we weren't going to talk about hockey until the playoffs started. But he made reference to the fact that it was supposed to start in July. Now it's in August, and the actual playoff August would be like when the teams can start practicing together, and then the actual playoffs would begin. I believe he said not until September, so it's like getting pushed back, and that's when I come back to like. Okay, can we just scratch the season? It's like, I don't know. And then I look back and I'm like, okay, I can understand, you know, Carrie from the Flyers fan club would be like, no, we were doing so well and that's fucked up and that's that. But it's like, really, there's so many things that have to be considered and the testing and the safety and all that other kind of stuff. And it's like, now we're going to push this season, you know, that should have been playoffs and, you know, the end of May into June. Now we're pushing it into August, maybe September. And that's just the beginning of it. It's like, well, like, you know, where does one season end and the other begin kind of thing?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I totally get that. And that's why I've come around to the thought, well, you know, I don't think it would be a complete disaster other than financial. If they just cut bait and decided, well, wait around till, you know, we've had some time, we have a real off season, let's have a draft, get the contract situation settled, and then think about what we're going to do for next year and just call this one a loss. Unintended consequence of all this might be the fact that the NHL might be forced to rethink their overall schedule permanently, in that the idea is being floated around that why not just start the season in January with the Winter Classic and maybe have the All-Star game before that in December. As if they even want to continue it as kind of an appetizer, I don't know, maybe, you know,
and maybe just trying to like let that go
or let that die. I was going to say something about the All-Star game itself, but that's not a tangent we really need to go down. But yeah, I mean that might be something that they look at going forward, and that's I don't know, but that's gonna cram the games too tightly, and then they're gonna run way past June, you know, anyway, and that might not be feasible, so that might not happen at all. So,
right.
But yeah, just wanted to put that out there. And of course, the reason the end of the season is significant, of course, is that kind of sort of automatically makes the Washington Capitals the Metropolitan Division champions, although if you talk to Grant Green, certain betting outlets are refusing to recognize that. Just wanted to share his pain. And of course, the statistical trophies have been awarded already. Of course, the Art Ross and the Richard Trophy for most goals is tied between Alex Ovechkin and David Pastrnak. I don't know which one of them got the first goal, but it ought to go to them. I think that ought to be the tiebreaker. I think they're just going to split it between them.
Right.
So.
And then Michael Kempney.
And then Michael Kempney, of course, yes, he was nominated by the Washington chapter of the Professional Hockey Writers Association as the team's nominee for the Bill Masterton Memorial Trophy. And
that's a tough one to.
To his resilience. About. Yes. And a 30-second history lesson here. The Bill Masterton Memorial Trophy is awarded to the NHL player who best exemplifies perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to the game of hockey. It was created in 1968 after the death of Bill Masterton, who, after years and years of playing junior and minor hockey, made his way on the team, the then Minnesota North Stars, now the Dallas Stars. And exemplified in his whole life a high level of perseverance, dedication, and sportsmanship where hockey was concerned. So the trophy is so named. So, that's where we are, unfortunately, with hockey. And we're still waiting. And I have a feeling we're going to be waiting. And it's for that reason, among others, that we're not going to have a show next week. Probably going to wait at least 1 or 2 weeks. Well, I'll make an announcement, but there's no point. I think that we've given you a lot, given you guys out there a lot to chew on for this week.
Can we just go back to the Bill Masterson thing for a sec? When I said it was a difficult, like I had a hard time. Like thinking about this award and then being like what it's really about, that you're talking about the only player in the NHL history to die as a direct result of injuries suffered during the game.
Ah, good catch, Anna. Good catch. Yeah, I didn't mention that.
That's
but
intense.
Yeah, it is.
And that's why for me, I was like, oh my God, look, I understand the statistics and all of his amazing characteristics as a player, but that to me it just like really hit home it's just heartbreaking to have to think about that as you know injuries and trophies and whatnot. But Michael Kempney had one of those thankfully not fatal injuries or you know but he had one of those grotesque hockey injuries that none of us want to think about our experience and his perseverance and compassion for the players and passion towards the sports. Good on him. You know, number six has always been a favorite of mine. And I think this is well deserved. I just hate the circumstances, you know, it's like, that this has to be an award, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and not to cheapen it, and it some have facetiously referred to it as the comeback player of the year award. Well, it's a lot more than that, and like you were saying, Anna, it's an injury like that. A lot of us would probably hope to be able to walk again, much less play hockey at a high professional level.
Right.
So yes, that indeed does speak to his dedication and perseverance in that regard. So yes, that's thank you very much for reminding me of that and for pointing that out. But yeah, that's those are the big stories as far as both hockey in general, NHL, and what's happening in our own backyard with our Washington Capitals. So we're going to end on something. Well, it's inherently sad, but I would like to also think of this as a celebration of life as well. I announced and we mentioned before. Last week, fellow Caps fan Frank Kirchner passed away after a long battle with kidney disease. And I first found out about him through a friend I used to work with, ironically enough, not a hockey fan at all. I mentioned her before, Kat Palmore, used to work at an IT company together. But yeah, when we had the masks, when we did the masks, she saw that I posted, you know, when I wore one, first one that Mrs. Blue Liner had made. Kat messaged me and said, "Oh, I know somebody who wants one. I know somebody who wants one. Can you give me the details?" I'm like, "Okay." And it turned out to be Frank, and I don't know. I wish now I hadn't wasted so much time with so many other things that were going on in my life. That I reached out to him and thanked him personally. But it turned out that Frank absolutely loved the mask. I posted a picture of him wearing it. If I knew any better, I'd have, you know, invited him to enjoy the show. I don't know. I really wish that I had just done more to reach out to him and show my appreciation that he, you know.
Right. But I think the fact that you are speaking from the heart right now and genuinely like honoring his, you know, just who he was as a person, that speaks volumes. So we can't go back on the what ifs and, you know, coulda, shoulda, what is. You have to move forward. We are going to honor and acknowledge and praise and however we want to look at it moving forward. So I think everything that we're doing right, like what you're doing right now, acknowledging it is just as important as anything else.
I know. And I just wanted to express my regret because, you know, here's another fellow Caps fan. And the more I got to know him, the more I thought, wow, it's almost like, it was like Mike Devenir. It's almost like looking into a mirror. And there were a lot of parallels to Mike Devenir as well. Right. Of course, he's an avid Caps fan. He played goalie like Mike Devenir did. On several local amateur teams and in, you know, in local leagues. You know, his friends knew him as friends and loved ones knew him as a very generous and caring person. You know, and his battle with kidney disease took its toll on him. I know a tiny, tiny bit about this because, a few years ago, I had problems with my kidneys a while ago, and being a diabetic, I constantly have to be on the alert for that. So there's a whole lot of I can't stand that I'm, you know, I'm, something wants to have this steer this towards being about me when it's not. It's not about me. I can't stand talking about myself, but there's a whole lot of there, but for the grace of God go I when I look at this guy. And but I learned when I learned about him. Go ahead.
Right. No, but everything that you're saying is honoring his memory because of the way that you connected with him. And there's nothing wrong with I statements when you're talking about somebody, because if you had a relationship with them or wanted a relationship with them because you had something in common, the best thing to do is acknowledge it. So what we're saying right now is, you know, you had a lot of similarities and this is what you're feeling. So the I statements to me are completely justified.
I appreciate that. There was,
and I'm gonna put out my little peanuts Lucy tin cans at 5 cents if you wanna have the talk to the psychiatrist or whatever it is that she's totally kidding. Totally kidding.
I get yeah. that. I
yes,
get
you
that.
Do. All right. And I'm sorry. So go on. I'm sorry.
Well, so there was so much more to him though. I found out in learning about him. You know, even though he was fighting kidney disease, you know, it was still. I mean, he's still relatively young. He's only 46. You know, he. I want to make sure I got that right. No, 44. Pardon me. His birthday was April the 20th, 76. Very close to another fellow fan that passed away a year ago, Becca Thomas. So many parallels, so many crossroads I'm finding. But yeah, very, very young, 44. You know, such a shame. And he was going to be the godfather to a friend's daughter, friend's first child later this year. And he had a Yorkshire Terrier that he loved very much. And I took a picture. I grabbed a picture of them when I could. I posted that as well. You can see him playing with that dog. And like Mike Divenaire, he was dedicated to music. He was a huge fan of the band Cold. And he was a huge fan of the band Cold. And he saw them 5 times, including last year when he worked an overnight shift, as I found out later, went straight to morning dialysis, and then straight downtown on no sleep to meet the band before the concert. This is how dedicated a fan he was to them. And the story I heard was that the smile when he met the lead singer, Scooter Ward, was enough to... Well, light up the whole planet, visible from the space station, is the exact quote I have. So many people in his life that vouched for him and said he was the type of guy to do anything for anyone in need. Even in the last years when he was exhausted and in pain from, you know, kidney disease and its complications and all of that. And you know, another friend of his that I got to know that purchased a mass for her child, Kara Sulin Stone. They actually dated for a while. I had a conversation with her, and she said one of the hallmarks of his character was that, and as much in pain as he was never ever one to make that about him. Never one to complain about it. Never one to be like, well, I have this problem. Woe is me. I deserve some consideration. No, not for a second. Did he ever make it about him? And
it sounds like an amazing person that I wish I would have met.
Yeah, absolutely. He was. I really wish I'd gotten to know him in life. And
yeah,
I can't help.
Can we honor his memory now?
Yes, we do. I can't help but, you know, and I think I'm pretty sure he still played hockey even after he was diagnosed, and so I can't help but think of him tending goal with that mindset and a shooter bearing down on him and him thinking, well, I've got lightning bolts running through my body, ravaging me.
Right.
You think you're going to get a puck past me? You think you're going to hurt me with 6 ounces of frozen vulcanized rubber? You think you're going to hurt me and get past me? F you!
Right.
You're not gonna make a dent in me. You can't get past me.
Bring it on, bitch!
I can just see him thinking
that.
He
sounded absolutely fantastic. Again, wish I could have known him, but we're going to honor his memory. That's what the only thing we can do at this moment is do that, because it speaks volumes. And the people who know him and love him hopefully will hear the show and know that we are like, hell yeah, he's, you know, in goaltending in heaven and rocking it and having an awesome time and certainly not in any more pain.
Yep, and my first thought is
not to make it religious.
He's right. He's in hockey heaven, and he's keeping the crease clean where he is. So didn't want to end this special episode on a sad note, but you know, that was the life of Frank Kirchner, and I hope I did it justice. I hope I made it more of a celebration, because truly the world was a lot better for his time. And if there is a good that came out of it, it's the good that he showed to the people he left behind. An example that, well, there is good in humanity.
Yeah.
Not to be overly,
it's okay to say that.
Yeah, not to be overly corny about it, but yeah. All right. So I think that's a good place to wind things up. Don't you think?
I think so. I think that's a great, as you know, we had a lot of good people on our shows throughout so many episodes, but I think tonight was, you know, we took it on a little more of a serious note with Stuart, but I can't appreciate his input enough, your input enough. I think everybody has, you know, we all need to have a voice and not be ashamed or vulnerable about it. And I think that the tribute to a fellow Caps fan at the end is the perfect way to end the show, because yeah, why not? It's a good way to end.
Well, you know me and you know what's coming, but before that, yes, I would like to thank both yourself, of course, and Stuart, very, very much for your adding your perspectives. And again, make no mistake, folks, you out there, not just here in the DMV, District of Columbia, State of Maryland, and Commonwealth of Virginia, but in all 50 states and around the world, we all have a voice. We all have something to add to this. And hopefully by listening to this, we've done whatever little we can to start and keep the dialogue going. So thank you all for indulging us. So with that, this is the Blue Liner on Point signing off and reminding you that you should never donate money to anyone collecting for a marathon. You know why?
Nope.
All they do is take the money and run.
Nope.
Hallelujah, and let's go Caps.
Go Caps.
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conkle.
Hello again. Me again. And yeah, that certainly was an intense episode as far as emotions go, notwithstanding 2 years ago when the Stanley Cup was won, of course. But that's what happens when you get three people who are very passionate about human life and justice. But I feel the need to come back on here and clarify a few points. Not the least of which in that I'm not naive enough to believe for a minute that everyone out there, or at least not everyone that listens, will agree with us or agree with some of us or even me. For example, when I introduced Stuart and I mentioned his Christian faith right off, that was merely to describe what makes Stuart Stuart. That was not meant to be a qualifier in and of itself to be a part of a discussion about racism, or this discussion in particular. It was merely how a description of how he represents himself and where he learned how to treat others. But of course, that's not to say that that's the only way to that path. It would not really have mattered to me or to Anna, and I'm certainly sure that it doesn't mean anything to you listening, Wouldn't have mattered whether he was Muslim, Jewish, or an atheist, or whatever his belief system is. But it is part of his character. As I said, it is what makes him him. My apologies, sincerely, though, if it caused any confusion. No offense was intended. But, again, that's how I've come to know him, is through his showing of faith. But, again, not a qualifier for this discussion at all. And, secondly, you may have noticed that we did not make a point exactly of denouncing the police, at least not by identifying them. And that's not to say that, well, speaking for myself now, that I don't deplore their actions. I do. I think they're responsible for a lot of the injustice that goes on. And how to handle that going forward, you know, I'm not going to shy away from that. But then again, I'm also not an elected official either. So if you're asking me if I have a solution to what to do about them going forward, well, honestly, I don't. But I do know that things need to change. And that, again, they are, at least in a very huge part, responsible for the problem that exists. Make of that what you will. Now, again, you're welcome to agree or disagree with me, give your opinion. That was the purpose of this whole thing, is to start and have put in motion a dialogue. So I welcome everyone's opinion. And like it or not, though, this is going to be something that is part of the discussion going forward, because we need to include more persons of color, more ethnic diversity in the sport of hockey going forward. And at least in that part of that which makes that part of our world, I hope to see improvement. I really do. That's a big reason why we're doing all this. So you want to contact me, I'm at the Facebook page. Look us up, Power Play Point Podcast, glhallowed@yahoo.com is my personal email address. Welcome to have a dialogue with me however you wish, and let me know how you feel. And let us all know how you feel. We'd really like to know. I just want to thank all of you for listening and indulging us. And I really hope you took something important away from all this. And bless you all, everyone, for taking part. Thanks so much.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Power Play Point Podcast.